Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and we got another great one for you today. Today, we actually connect with John Mulligan. John is a TV host, outdoorsman, father, bow hunter. He's just an all-around badass is basically what he is. I want to thank John, of course, for coming on the podcast. It was a lot of fun to hear some stories from him. In fact, some of his stories are a little unique today because he talks a little bit more about the hunting industry and not just hunting stories. But he ends it with an amazing antelope story that I specifically requested. So thank you, John. I do appreciate your time, man. I will say to the listeners, I did have a couple audio issues. They were all on my side, not John's side. So sometimes I wasn't recording. Don't know why. I tried to clean it up. So if it sounds a little funny, I apologize for that. But that's it, guys. Let's let John tell you some of his stories. Thank you. All right, John, welcome to the Hunting Stories Podcast, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing really, really good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty awesome. You know, I can't complain. I'm headed to go fishing and maybe turkey hunting this weekend. So it's just a matter of killing some time before I can get there, man. But for now, we're here to hear your stories, man. And I've been following you for a while, and I'm excited to hear some of your stories. Why don't we do this? Why don't we let you introduce yourself to the folks that are listening today so they know who they're hearing some hunting stories from?
Okay. So my name's John Mulligan. On social media, I go by the name Johnny Utah. And at some point, I'm sure we'll probably get into where that nickname comes from. But I grew up in Kentucky, and honestly, growing up as a kid, we didn't even have whitetails. I'm 46 years old. So when I was a teenager, we didn't even have whitetails in central Kentucky. And if it was, it's not something you were going to invest a lot of time into. Not a lot of people did it because there wasn't a lot of success. And
yeah.
So nonetheless, you know, they always say hunting usually is passed down like a legacy thing, right? You know, it's like it's passed down from your folks or a grandparent or something, but mm-hmm. I didn't have that influence. So I didn't even buy my first hunting license until I was 22 years old when I moved to Northern Kentucky. And, you know, since then I've gone from Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati to now Iowa. And, hunt and fish every chance I get. So
that's awesome. So you aren't fished out of Utah?
No, I had no idea. At all. Yeah. Yeah. So, I have a degree in horticulture, which is phenomenal come food plot season. But I actually had spent a career in law enforcement and undercover narcotics.
Oh, wow.
So I did a little stint with FBI task force and also DEA task force. But when I was doing the FBI stuff, one of my buddies, my old business partner at Wicked Tree Gear, he was like, dude, you're the real Johnny Utah. And he's, you know, playing off of the movie Point Break, Keanu Reeves' character. So the nickname literally stuck. I mean, that we were at a trade show and I didn't even give it like two thoughts. But like the next day at the trade show, people are coming by the booth and they're like, Johnny Utah, give me two. And I thought, man, there could be worse nicknames, I guess. And I've never seen a nickname stick so fast. And so I just kind of ran with it.
That's awesome. I've actually got a long history of giving people nicknames, that stick. And I don't even mean to, and you're right. Johnny Utah is a great nickname to have. I'll tell you a quick story about my hunting buddy. His nickname is Little Pricker. Right. Which you don't want that nickname. Right, but basically we're sitting there glassing, one day looking for elk and he's just starts digging around in his pants. You know, he takes his belt off and reaches in there and just starts, rummaging around. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
Sure.
And he looks at me and goes, man, I got this little pricker. And I was like, what did you just say to me? Like, And I was like, I think what you meant is like a sticker burr, but from now on, I'm calling you Little Pricker, and it is absolutely stuck, and it's expanded. People outside of our hunting group even call him Little Pricker, so poor guy. So yeah, you're pretty lucky just to go with Johnny Utah. That's a pretty sweet nickname in the big scheme of things, man. Well, let me do this. This is a little out of the normal. I didn't know that you were kind of undercover FBI DEA agent. Do you have a story from that's not hunting related that you have off the top of your mind that you wouldn't mind sharing with us? Just like some cool or interesting one. If not, we can just jump into hunting.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a ton of them. Usually it's kind of one of those things like somebody has to, give me a color or a vehicle or, you know, and then that'll trigger, you know, which story I go with. But, you know, one of the stories that comes to mind all the time is, you know, law enforcement and the law, as much as we like to look at it, it's like, oh, it's black and white. You know, you do this and this is the punishment. You know, you can do this, you can't do that, you know, legally. But in reality, it's very fluid. Because every circumstance is a little different, but in narcotics, not to sound cliche and corny, but it's literally 50 shades of gray. Because everything is so different and there's so many little things that are involved. Like, did you set the person up? When, you know, was there coercion? You know, you really have to prove that this person is a drug dealer and this is what they are doing, you know, for monetary purposes. But we were setting up outside a house. We had already sent an informant in, and then one of our undercover guys had gone into the house, and we were had set up a perimeter. The team had stacked up on the front door, you know, like you see in the movies, you know, not police, search warrant, door ram, through the door, guys funnel in, clear the house, arrest everybody inside, and, you know, we start doing evidence collection. But I was on perimeter. This was not my case, and I was actually helping some guys in my unit. And, you know, they called, and they said, hey, we need you to sit, you know, we need another body on perimeter. So I'm just, like, camped out, leaned up against a tree. It's at night, so it's pretty dark, and I'm in the shadows. But I am literally dressed in your stereotypical raid gear. You know, I've got the law enforcement jacket on, I've got the belt, I've got the vest over top of it that says, you know, police, narcotics, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm standing there with a handgun, you know, at the low ready position. And this guy is walking down the sidewalk and he's like, hey, hey. And I'm looking over at him like, what in the heck is this guy doing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And he's like, hey. He's like, dude, he's like, keep your voice down. There's a lot of cops in the area. He's like, do you want to buy some rocks?
No way.
And my first thought was, dude, get the fuck out of here. You know, beat it, right? And then I thought, this is a story. This is a story I might get to tell on a podcast someday. So I'm like, yeah, how much you got? And he's like, I got $100 worth. I'm like, I got cash. Bring it over here. So he literally walks off the sidewalk, comes into the yard that I'm in up against the tree, and he holds out his hand and he's got, you know, a couple of corner cut baggies with some crack in there. And I'm like, I tell you what, why don't you just go ahead and put your hands behind your back? So I zip tie this guy, you know, hands behind his back. And I do just a real quick pat down to make sure he doesn't have a gun on him or anything. And I'm like, park it next to the tree. So he's sitting at the base of the tree right next to me. My guys clear the house. They come out once everything's safe. You know, we holster up. Guys start coming back out. And they're like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, the guy just sold. He was trying to sell me crack while I was standing here and, like, literally wearing a police jacket, you know. So thankfully, criminals aren't always the most intelligent at times.
Yeah.
But that was one of those where I'm like, what a dumbass, you know?
Right. He had to be high, right?
Oh, like, yeah. He was fucked up. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That, I guess that makes a little bit more
that's
sense.
No immunity, you know, in the laws of the court, you know?
Yeah.
But
legal's
yeah.
Legal's illegal, but at least it makes sense to, cause otherwise he's just really stupid. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd rather, I guess, be a little bit high than that stupid. I guess.
And, you know, and we would have the occasional, like, patrol guys, you know, because we were driving Crown Vicks, you know, they would have the occasional, like, drunk that would just stagger and get into the back seat of the car thinking it was a taxi cab.
Oh, yeah.
That happened on several occasions.
That's too funny, man. That's,
you know, once
too
you're
funny.
In, you can't get out, you know what I mean, from the inside. So,
yeah,
it's, pretty comical.
Drunk in public. There you go. All right. Yep. Well, John, well, thanks for sharing that, man. That was a fun little non-hunting story.
Yeah.
So let's go back to, let's get back on track, right? So why don't you set the stage for your first hunting story? Because I'd love to hear, you know, what you got for us, especially because I'm a Western guy. So I love hearing Eastern hunting tales. I just don't, I don't get many of these whitetail folks on the podcast. So this is great.
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, we didn't have a lot of whitetails in central Kentucky. So when I moved to northern Kentucky, you know, we had some whitetails, and one of my buddies that I actually went through the police academy with, he was from Texas, and, you know, obviously Texas is hunting plentiful, and, but he didn't hunt much, but he had a lot of buddies and family that did. So he was a little more versed in it than I was. And so he you know, hit me up one day. He's like, dude, we ought to get into whitetail hunting. And I'm like, man, I don't know anything about it. You know, I don't even know where to start. So to age myself, granted we had computers, but still there was more information in the public library.
Interesting.
I literally went and checked out a bunch of books in the library about, you know, whitetail hunting 101, whitetail strategies, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I have since gone back and purchased those original books that I checked out of the library just to have them as kind of keepsakes. But
that's
how
awesome.
I taught myself how to hunt. And I mean, I can tell you right now, it was like straight to Walmart. I bought a Winchester 270. I think it might have been a Bushnell scope. Maybe that maybe what either came on it or what I bought, but I mean, I think I paid $60 for the scope or something, but, I bought some Walmart camo. I think it was Realtree in some, you know, some off brand that they were licensed with or something at the time. And away we went. And, I mean, I like to say I didn't know shit about fuck, you know, I mean, I literally had no idea what I was doing.
I still feel that way sometimes.
But I knew that if I saw a deer, I was confident in my shooting abilities, you know, with a scope and a rifle. But I was just having a really hard time just even getting on deer. Knowing what do deer do? You know, how do they move? How do they transition from bedding? You know, what are their patterns? What to look for? I just didn't, you know, I didn't have that knowledge. So I spent the entire season, every single off day. And on the very last day of Kentucky's season, I ended up shooting two does. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is super cool. And so I got the bug. Then of course I started picking up muzzleloader seasons, you know, because I didn't want to have to sit out and I wanted to hunt as much as I could and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I ended up hunting for several years. I had killed a couple of bucks at this point, and I remember getting ready for a deer season, and there was a gun store in northern Kentucky. It's called Mark's Guns, and the guy that runs the place, his name's Joe Beck. I owe so much to Joe, career-wise, you know, as far as me even having a future in this, because we're getting ready for deer season. He's like, man, you getting fired up? And I'm like, I'll be honest. I was like, it's fun, but it's not that fun. You know, like if there's nothing else better to do, you know, I might pick up a tag and I might go and sit a few days, and he's like, you know what your problem is you need a bow. And I said, well, I can tell you with a toddler at home, that's the last thing I need to do is spend more money. My wife's going to, you know, kick my ass. And, I said, so I'll probably just stick with the rifle and maybe I'll hunt, maybe I won't. And he was is still a Matthews dealer, but he said, I tell you what, Matthews allows me to give away one shooter bow a year and I want to give it to you. And I said, look, dude, I might be poor, but I don't want a handout. You know what I mean? You know, at this point I was like a 3-4 year police officer, you know, with a toddler at home, you know, wasn't making a lot of money at that point in my career. And I just didn't think that was being fiscally responsible to, you know, buy a bow and all the shit that comes with it. So I said, nah, man, I'll sit out. And he goes, no, I insist. And he said, I just have a feeling that I need to keep you hunting because I just have this feeling in the back of my head that you're going to do something with hunting someday as a career.
Wow. And
I'm like, you're full of shit. You know what I mean? Because at this point, the only thing I knew was like Lee Likoski, Michael Waddell, you know, Jim Shockey, Roger Ragland. And I'm thinking, there is no way I'm going to be like, you know, hanging out with Ted Nugent someday or something like that. But he gave me the bow.
Foresight, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever go back and ask him, like, why did you say that? Like, what was it? And did you ever really talk to him?
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about it since. And he just said, man, he goes, you're just one of those people that you're extremely laser focused. You're persistent like I've never seen before. And you don't give up on things. And you're the type of person that not only do you hunt, but you'll take the time to study in the field, off the field, and continue to, you know, perfect your craft. Yeah. And he's like, I just feel like that type of dedication, you know, there's something you could really do here someday. So, he got me the bow and that changed everything. You know, I mean, that first season I was like, shit, give me my rifle back. This is hard, you know? Cause every time I try to move or stand up or draw, I'd get busted and, you know,
yeah.
Cause again, I'm still learning even how to set up in a tree, you know, how to set up on these deer to have opportunities, you know, and, you know, when to draw and, you know, you don't know what you don't know and till you screw it up, you know, but, So I just, you know, stayed the course. I enjoyed it. You know, the one thing that kept me motivated was even though I wasn't having a lot of success, it was so different from what my career was, you know, call it the concrete jungle or if you will. But, you know, every day I'm out there trying to bust people, you know, riding dirty, or I'm trying to buy dope off people. And I got to go to the woods by myself. And, you know, there's no woods in the dope fields, you know what I mean? So to speak, like, you know, you're mostly in housing projects or, you know, urban environments and things like that for the most part. But so it was just very different from everything that I did. And it kind of gave me a nice balance in life. And it created a really awesome ebb and flow, to kind of relax and unwind and reconnect, you know, with the world and be like, all right, maybe the world isn't just a shithole. You know what I mean? Like everybody's not a turd, right? You know?
There's so some beauty out there.
Yeah. So it gave me that balance and whatnot. So, yeah, man. And then fast forward till about 2013, I went to a trade show and I met a guy by the name of Todd Prignitz, and he had a show called White Knuckle Productions. And he was just getting ready to launch a company called Wicked Tree Gear. And he was developing a folding handsaw for trimming shooting lanes and just a nice wood saw to have out there in the woods, you know, for whitetail hunters. You know, you Western guys aren't cutting many branches, you know. But for us, what, you know, for the whitetail side of things, it's, you know, almost every whitetail hunter has a saw with them at all times.
Gotcha.
You know, because we're tree stand, you know, hunting so much more. But I met him and I liked his DVDs. They were interesting. He passed a lot of deer. You know, he had this relentless pursuit at chasing 5, 6, 7-year-old whitetails in Iowa and of course in Kentucky. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I've never seen deer this big in my life, you know. So him and I hit it off. We became buddies. We met at a trade show. I ended up becoming a dealer for Wicked, and then I ended up becoming part owner of Wicked, and then I joined White Knuckle Productions, started filming my hunts, and I took to that, and that was a lot of fun. And then he's really took me under his wing and kind of put me in charge of the team and in charge of the partnerships. So I started learning the business side, like trial by fire. And again, this is all a hobby for me, you know, so I really got to have fun because, you know, my paycheck was dependent on, you know, my law enforcement career.
Yeah.
And never in a million years did I ever think that this thing would blow up the way it did. And by 2016, you know, Wicked Tree Gear is sold in every Cabela's and Bass Pro in the world. And an equity group came in and bought our company. Todd took his payout as a lump sum. I took mine as an agreement that I would continue to work for the company for 3 years.
Okay.
Because I didn't really know what I wanted to do next, you know, career wise. So I thought, shit, let me just go ahead and take this guaranteed job for 3 years. And then I've got 3 years to figure it out, you know, kind of what I want to be when I grow up. But it was also contingent on me moving to Iowa. And I'm like, yeah, twist my arm. You know,
I get to go get resident. Ask me twice.
Yeah, I get resident buck tags every year. Like, yeah, you know, cool. So for the listeners that don't know the way Iowa operates for archery, if you're a non-resident, you can only get one buck tag on average once every 5 years.
Okay.
If you're a resident,
is it a point system? Sorry to interrupt.
But, yep. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's a point system, just the same way you guys have that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then if you're a resident, then you get two buck tags every year. So I thought, well, fuck it. I'll just move to Iowa. You know what I mean? I get two buck tags every year instead of one every five. So, and I can still come back to Kentucky to hunt over the counter, you know, bucks if I choose. So it was kind of a win-win. So wife and three kids packed everybody up, walked away from law enforcement after 16 years and, we made the move.
Was that a tough transition? Cause it's like pretty
very much. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say it's a pretty hard or not hard, but like a high adrenaline gig you had going now to be basically, you know, not exactly an office worker, but that's gotta be a big, big change.
It was, you know, and luckily, you know, the hunting started increasing at that point. And so it kind of, it kept me busier than normal. Cause now that I don't have a day job per se, like now I can spend more time in the woods. So that was huge. And there's a lot of other things that really came into play. Like I've always been really big into fitness, you know, going to the gym every single day of my life. And I've done that since I was like 15 years old. So a lot of those things, they came into play. I found a local gym so I could keep some of the norms, you know what I mean? The same, right? But,
help you with the transition. That makes sense.
But it was very awkward. You know, you go from, you know, 500,000 people to 3,000 people, you know, in an area. So that part was a little weird, you know, like it's like moving to Mayberry or Mount Pilot, you know what I mean? From like,
Is Iowa, let me ask, is Iowa got much for public or do you kind of got to have somebody with some land?
No. So that's the other thing. Iowa public is actually banger. I mean, it's really, really good. Yeah. If you're willing to walk, it gets overlooked a lot and people are like, oh yeah, it's public land. I'm like, yeah, but it's public land in Iowa. You know, it's like, let's go to Hollywood and let's look at the C tier actors. They're all still gorgeous. You know what I mean? Like, even though they're C tier, they're still gorgeous. It's Hollywood, you know? So, your average country singer in Nashville is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
that's the truth.
Yeah. So, I mean, Iowa's got some really good public. And like I said, I think it does get overlooked a lot. And in other places like Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Michigan, you know, the public just gets ransacked and it gets a bad reputation, you know?
Yeah,
I had to share a tree with five guys today. You know what I mean?
I lived in Texas for a while and there's just not much for public down there. You got kind of like, everyone's like, oh man, there's so much hunting in Texas, but if you aren't willing to pay for it or don't know somebody.
Yeah. If you don't have access to private, you're exactly correct. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, Texas is, you got to have access to private and it's going to be fenced.
Yep.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's fenced, you know, that's the way Texas is. So,
you know, a trick, and I've told this on the podcast before, but, in Texas, public land or rivers were public land. No, I guess they still are public land. But a few years ago you could actually hunt them. They've since changed the law, but like I got my first ever whitetail hunting rivers in Texas. So I found a dry river because it needs to be navigable, which does not necessarily mean water for a boat. It means like wider across than it is deep, or like 30 feet across or something like that, for like on average. So I ended up, I ended up just finding a dry riverbed. You know, I called the warden, made sure everything was on the up and up, and he understood what I was doing. Gave me the okay, and I went down there and ended up shooting probably like a 130 buck, like super happy with it. I'm a little worried that I wrote a letter of recommendation to that game warden because the landowners of the area were not happy that I did that. And I got followed around town when I came out of that riverbed. Like, they literally, the trucks were driving around with me, and I'm not sure that he kept his job, but I do know they changed that law a year later. So I don't know if I had anything to do with that or not, but it's pretty crazy in Texas. So
for sure. And I've actually done a lot of hunting in Texas, turkeys and hogs and coyotes and stuff like that. You know, I'm in Iowa, finally got access to a small lease, you know, that I could start doing food plots on and whatnot. Once I got to Iowa and I was no longer business partners with Todd through Wicked, then we kind of realized we started butting heads more on the TV show side of things. You know, he was more about, it's got to be a big whitetail and it's got to be awesome video, and that's all that matters. And I was like, on more of the, man, I really think photography is going to take off a lot more. And he's like, that's stupid. No one will ever pay for photos. There's no way you'll ever make a career as a photographer. So the decision was made. You know, what is it they say? If you don't like something, you can either bitch about it or you can leave and go do your own thing, you know?
Shit or get off the pot, right?
Yeah, yep. So that was a decision that was made. I left and started my own show. And, very cool. You know, and it wasn't on the surface, it very well could have looked like, oh, man, he came in here, he learned everything he could from Todd, and then he bailed and took all of Todd's partnerships. And you know, that's really not the way it played out. I mean, it was really one of those situations where he gave me, and I told him, I was very appreciative. He gave me an opportunity to learn the business side of it. He's the one that put me in charge of, you know, negotiating with the partnerships. And, you know, at the same time, those partnerships were then the ones that were coming to me saying, hey, we would like more photography, you know, with Instagram and Facebook, you know, we need to be making more posts. And so we could use more straight photos. It's not just about the DVD. We need more daily content, you know? So that was the route that I went, man. I went chips all in, self-taught photography, started doing a lot more. I got into freelance photography and was working with a lot of companies early on. In 2015, Sitka Gear approached me and they said, hey, we're working on this new whitetail pattern. We've always been known as a Western only brand, and we want you to be a part of our ambassador team. We're handpicking like 25 whitetail killers, you know, in the United States. And we, you know, we want you. So I joined that. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I really did, man. I'm one of those people. Yeah. Well, I'm one of those people that I don't like to ask other people for help. And it's not that I want to be the I want all the credit because I figured this out on my own. I don't want to inconvenience other people. Like, when people send me messages daily, I'm like, ask Google. That's what I did. Google it. You know, like, figure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so crazy. Like, there's a YouTube video or there's a million Google searches that can answer so many questions. And, you know, also I get inundated daily with, hey, who's your contact at Hoyt? Who's your contact at Easton? Who do I need to talk to at Diamondback Truck Covers? And I'm like, there's not a single son of a bitch that has ever given me that information. Like, every partnership I've landed on my own. And not that I'm a person that keeps tabs, but if I did, I got a shit ton of favors owed to me. I mean, a piss load of favors owed to me. And I just keep kind of a mental checklist of those people. And I'm like, You've never liked a single one of my posts. You've never commented. You don't watch my show, but you always come to me and ask me for information. But you've never not liked The Crush, you know, or Montana Knife Company, or, you know, whoever. Just pick a brand or pick a celebrity influencer. And I'm like, why don't you go ask that person who, you know, who a contact is, see if they actually answer you, you know? So that's the part that, you know, still frustrates me, you know, today, but, you know, whatever, I digress. I stuck with it, man. I stuck with the photography, tried to get as good as I could with it and use that to try to help tell some stories and kind of create a brand for myself. 'Cause you can't do this business on, oh man, this guy's a hell of a killer. It's probably not going to get you very far. You've got to do something else with it to help build the brand and hit it from all angles, you know? So I got as good as I could with photography and got my own show up and going. I started the show. I was worried about not having enough content. So I had some pro staff guys that came on board with me initially. And no offense to those guys. Most of them I'm still friends with. The others, we didn't have a falling out. We just don't talk anymore, you know. But it became very obvious that I'm the one that had skin in the game. You know, this was paying my mortgage. To them, it was fun. And they kind of shit on me. You know, like, here's an example. Let's say a company's going to pay me $5,000. Well, instead, I would take $2,500 and then $2,500 in product. And that gave me $2,500 worth of product to give to my pro staff. So they weren't having to buy trail cameras. They weren't having to buy lighted Nox or, you know, whatever. And in turn, all they had to do was take a couple of photos, you know, help support the brand, share some posts, you know, be active, be engaging. Yep. And they just simply didn't do it. And I'm like, you guys basically took money off my plate. And they're like, well, it wasn't really money. And I'm like, no, it was, because I could have taken the cash, but instead I took the product option so you guys would get free shit. And I'm like, I understand you didn't get money, but you didn't have to spend money to buy a trail camera that you needed and you were going to buy anyways. So anyways, I feel like I kind of got shit on, taken advantage of. So I just said, well, it's very easy for people from the outside looking in to be like, oh, must be nice. And I'm like, yeah, must have been real nice when I had $7 in my checking account. And I was using my credit cards as a line of credit to keep the show afloat or to buy the next tag for the next state or to buy the next camera or to pay a videographer, you know, that was helping me film a hunt, you know. I'm like, yeah, must be nice. So, you know, you catch a lot of that stuff and, you know, those are the people, they just don't know. They don't know what goes into it. They don't see all the behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, 2019, that's when I had chased this dream and, you know, it's like they say, like, you know, you look at a duck just looks stoic and, you know, just swimming on top of the water, floating around. But what you don't see is his feet under the water, moving a mile, you know, a million miles an hour, you know, just busting ass. And that's kind of the way it is in a lot of this stuff. And there's so much on social media that's like fake it till you make it. You know, 99% of the so-called influencers on social media, this is not what they do for a living. They're supplementing their income in another way. But they make it look like this is what they do for a living. I mean, in reality, there's probably only 25 of us that actually produce a television show for a living. And I'm one of those 25. No, there's people that have side businesses and, you know, side gigs or independently wealthy or a trust fund or they're totally content to live in a tent, you know, and have a $200 car. And I can tell you right now, my wife's not going to put up with that, you know? So, yep. So anyways, you know, I was dedicated to it. There's no quit. And 2020, things took a big turn. 21, things took a huge turn. 22, another big bump, and 23, a bump. And then, you know, 24, this is, you know, the best year ever with the lineup of partnerships that I have right now supporting me on the show. And I don't call them sponsors. I've always looked at them as partnerships because they're partnering with me, and my job is to help them grow. And people are like, oh man, well, you know, sometimes it looks like, you know, you're promoting the shit out of that company. Yeah. You ever listen to a TV show or a radio show and they're like, well, we got to step away and pay the bills for a little bit. You know, that's what it takes. Like if I was independently wealthy, I would just hunt. I wouldn't film shit. You know, like I would just hunt to hunt and nobody would know about it. But this is my job. This is what I do. I mean, nobody critiques somebody that's like, man, I can't believe your dumbass got up and went to a 9-to-5. Well, yeah, that's what I do for a living. That's my job. That's how I got to make money. You know, like, how are you going to blame me for that? So, and I try to do it in the most authentic way that I can, which takes a lot of creativity because you can only kick a dead horse so many times. But I try to make the shows as engaging as I can. I try to show people some of the behind the scenes. But if people pay attention to my social media, you know, I'm also dropping little clues about how it is that I've been able to be successful in this. And I attribute it to strong work ethic, having a life outside of hunting as well. Find other ways to build confidence. And for me, it's weightlifting and jiu-jitsu. And those are things that I'm extremely dedicated to. I do both of them individually 5 to 7 times a week. And, you know, it teaches you that you can go in and kick your own ass and you survived. You came back stronger the next day. And there's a lot of life lessons, you know, that I think just some people have just never been pushed hard. You know, they've never been punched in the face. They've never been told no. Some people are just soft, you know what I mean? And it's sad because to quote Dana White, in 2023 and 2024, in this day and age, if you have one sliver of savagery in your body, you will win. It doesn't take much nowadays because there's a lot of weak people out there that don't have a lot of backbone and don't have a lot of perseverance. Well, you're better today than you were yesterday. You know, every day is better, and it doesn't have to happen in big giant leaps. You know, I've got one of my really good friends where he's like, man, I just suck as a hunter. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, like I kill one animal a year and you're killing 8 or 9 a year. And I went, stop for a second. You just got into hunting 4 years ago. I've been doing this as a career for 12 years. And the opportunities that I get, I just get more opportunities. You know, I don't have a 9-to-5 per se that I got to take off work. The only thing that resembles a 9-to-5 is, you know, sometimes we have photo shoots that are requirements with a partnership. And so we might just have to take a day and go shoot some photos and shoot some content, you know, for a brand or for a partner that we're working with. But other than that, I get a lot of opportunities. I get that. And, you know, I had a buddy that was like, man, so-and-so was trash talking you. And he was like, man, the only reason John kills lots of animals is because he has a hunting show and that's what he gets to do for a living. I'm like, he's fucking right. You know, he's right. I go, but yeah, I created that opportunity. You know, I'm the one that suffered to give myself, you know, those opportunities. So, you know, when luck and opportunity come together, that's when rad shit happens. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's really the backbone of a lot of it. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that for the last, you know, once I hit like 2016, 2017, I started traveling out west more. And, you know, I've shot several pronghorn, several velvet mule deer in Colorado and, Saskatchewan, you know, moose and whitetails, mule deer there, been to South Africa twice, been to Spain once, So, you know, from a kid that grew up in Central Kentucky, you know, I'm the son of an Irish Catholic plumber. Fun for us was going to the dirt track races and watching some, you know, some round dirt track late models race. And if I would have stayed home and taken over my dad's plumbing business and went to the dirt track on the weekend, I can't say that that necessarily would have been a bad life. But I never imagined that, I would have some of the opportunities, you know, that I've had. And, you know, you constantly have to grow and evolve, you know, with Sitka, phenomenal gear, phenomenal brand, the marketing geniuses that they are. But I always felt like I was kind of on the outside looking in. I didn't really feel like I was a part of the brand, even though there's not a single whitetail guy on that ambassador team that could look you in the face and dead ass and be like, John didn't stack up whitetails every single year. But it just seemed like Sitka as a brand was more focused on the conservation and the Western hunting more than anything, even though a lot of people don't realize this, the whitetail pattern clothing outsells every other product category in that company combined every single year. Oh yeah. Like 10 to 1. It's not even close. Yep. So I was like, man, the whitetail stuff is bringing in more money than anything, but it doesn't feel like they're putting in the effort here. And, you know, talk about opening new doors and like not burning bridges and having opportunities to meet super badass rad people. In 2013, I approached Under Armour and tried to get a partnership with Under Armour, and you know, their Ridge Reaper pattern was getting really popular. And, of course, you know, me being a big fitness guy, like, hell yeah, man, Under Armour fits my brand. It's the stuff I do every day. And I had a meeting with a guy named Kobe Fulks. Kobe was in charge of their marketing department. His brother, Kip, was one of the founders of Under Armour. And so I had a meeting with Kobe, and he was like, man, I like you. You're a good dude. I like the law enforcement side of things, but you know, you're just not at the level yet. You're not good enough. You know, we're already paying people on your level. So if you're going to get paid by us, you know, you got to be better than them. You know, why buy more vanilla when we already got vanilla coming in, we're paying for. So anyways, I'm like, okay, what do I need to do to work on it? So he gave me a few pointers, told me what I needed to do as far as storytelling and content side of things. And those are the things that I worked on. And then, you know, you fast forward to the end of 2021 and I'm in negotiations with Under Armour, and in, we made the announcement official, I think in February of 22, but officially became an Under Armour athlete, you know, with the company corporate, you know, on a corporate level. So that was another one of those huge stepping stones. And it also gave me a good teaching point, you know, having young boys. I've got an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old at home, and saying, look, guys, shit doesn't happen overnight. You know, sometimes it takes 9 years, you know, for something to happen. So stay focused on your goals. Don't give up, and just, you know, be better today than you were yesterday. And you'll always be one step closer. And I'll never tell people that they need to go to the casino and gamble, but I will tell people that they need to bet on themselves every fucking day. Double down. I think it's one of those things that just doesn't get talked about enough. It's like, keep your head in the sand and, you know, whatever. The hunting industry is this magical place. It's not. It's cutthroat as fuck. People, there's a lot of backstabbing that goes on. You know, you're only as good as the last kill that you had. You have one bad whitetail season and the majority of people are like, well, I guess he ain't got it no more. I guess he lost it. You know, it's like, or I passed a bunch of 4-year-olds cause I didn't have any mature deer that I wanted to take. So, you know, you have some of that, but all in all, I've met a ton of assholes in this space, but I've really met some really badass people that I'm still good friends with today the guy that turned me down in 2013, Kobe Faulks, he just stayed at my house the other night. He was on his way traveling through, and he stopped and stayed here at the house with me and my wife. He needed a place to crash for the, you know, for the night. And so there's been a lot of friendships that I've made over the years and become best friends with people. There was a guy that I met online down in Texas. He's one of my best friends. I was at a trade show in 2020 and I met a girl. She came up to the booth to say hello. We became friends. Come to find out she has a veteran nonprofit, and I started doing some freelance photo work for their nonprofit, helping them promote it. She's now my camera girl. Yeah. I mean, my chick Leslie, that's, you know, she's my best friend, and I hired her, you know, at the end of last year. We made it, we made it official in like January of this year, but yeah, she became an employee of, you know, Primal Divide and Johnny Utah as a brand. So, taking a ton of weight off my shoulders. She's the one that does all my reels and she keeps me on schedule. And I know it sounds stupid, but one of her job requirements is essentially I bounce ideas off of her. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, hey, here's a partnership that I'm looking at. They want to work together. Do you see this being cohesive? And the great thing about it is she's becoming a hunter, but she's not from this world. So it's kind of a non-biased perspective, and she's a girl, and that's not me being sexist, but let's admit it, this is a male-dominated space, you know, for the most part. And so it gives me a chance to bounce ideas off of her. She's a big catfishing chick. That's her thing. And no, that blasphemy. No, they're all into just trophy catfish, rod and reel, and they let them go. Noodling, you can actually, you can injure the fish really bad if you're not careful. Yep. No, it's really not. Yep. Yeah. It's a very interesting thing. I did an episode with them in Pennsylvania. And I think, God, we scheduled 3 days to film. And by noon on the first day, I was like, that's a wrap. I can't lift my arms. We've caught like 30 fish and our average is like 42 pounds. I was like, I'm spent. Like my arms are done, you know, and I got big arms. So it's like, I was like, guys, I am done. This is ridiculous, but had a lot of fun doing that. And it was a neat perspective, but you know, this has given me a good opportunity to kind of evolve to, I've got back into shooting guns again. Cause I went about 15 years without hunting with a gun at all. I was bow only. You know, everybody's like, man, is he anti-gun? I'm like, no, I'm not anti-gun. I'm a, you know, former cop. Like, I'm like, no, I preferred hunting with a bow. And, but I've gotten into doing some AR-15 and pistol stuff and like tactical games competitions. And, I've taken a rifle out and done a few hunts with a rifle. And let's be honest, turkeys deserve to be shot in the face with a shotgun. But, I killed my first turkey, with a shotgun. And then I killed 43 in a row with a bow, including in 2020, I did a single season archery grand slam. That was pretty fun. I was the only person in the world to do that year. So that was neat. But this past season, just this past month, I shot two turkeys with a shotgun. You know, it's fun to shoot, you know, it's fun both ways, but damn, it's pretty cool shooting them in the face with a shotgun. But I also didn't want to be labeled as like this elitist, you know, like holier than now, the bow is the only way to go. You know, you take the word bow hunting and you take off the bow, you still have hunting. And, so I'm an advocate for all forms of legal hunting, and there are certain animals in certain locations that I'm like, nope, I'm doing this with a bow. I mean, spot and stalk Colorado mule deer, velvet Colorado, you know, mule deer. Like, I couldn't imagine doing that with something anything other than a bow, right? But, you know, I was in Saskatchewan And Saskatchewan's not known for giant moose. And I had an opportunity at like a 48-inch wide moose. And the only way I was going to be able to kill that moose was with a rifle. And I was like, man, I can be too awesome and be like, nope, I'm too good for a rifle. Or I can pick up this rifle, shoot this moose, and have one of the best hunts of my life, you know, at negative 33 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's exactly what I did. And I didn't think twice about it. You know, my largest whitetail was with a muzzleloader. My second largest is with a bow, but technically my largest whitetail is with a muzzleloader. So I remember the last whitetail that I shot with a rifle. And this was when I was in that transition of like, it's really not that exciting. You know what I mean? Like, I shot this deer and that he didn't even know I existed on earth. You know what I mean? And so that was in that transition of going to the bow or possibly just giving up hunting altogether. But I shot this deer and it was a Kentucky buck. I think he ended up scoring like 139 or something. And anyways, I shot him, you know, with this rifle, and my buddy, we walk up to him, we recover him. And he was like, man, you don't really seem that pumped up. And I'm like, well, I was like, I really thought he was bigger. You know, I was like, I mean, I'm happy. I'm stoked. It's meat in the freezer and he's a respectable buck, but I really did think that he was, you know, bigger than that actually. And he looks at my rifle and he's like, hey, dumbass. He's like, they all look big when you're 3x9x40. You know what I mean? You're dialed all the way into 9 power. He's like, I'm sure he did look huge. And we always kind of laugh about that. We're like, hey, you just want to make a deer look bigger? Just dial it down to 9 power or something, you know? But, yeah, it's cool, man. This year is going to be a super exciting year. I had the opportunity. I called in 3 turkeys for other people this year. And then I called in 3 for myself. That was a lot of fun. I got to take my buddy Corey Anderson. He's the current light heavyweight Bellator champion. So I got to call in a bird for him and see how excited he was. That was his first turkey, you know, that he killed. And so that was fun. That episode actually drops May 22nd. The episode Turkey TKO at 8 p.m. Eastern will be dropping on the Waypoint channel for my show Primal Divide. But yeah, you'll get to see Corey shoot his first turkey, and then Leslie and I doubled up in Ohio, and then I solo doubled up with a bow and a shotgun in Iowa, which is something I've never done before. That was awesome. That was pretty damn chaotic, trying to self-film and shoot one turkey with a bow, and then before the next turkey ran away, grab the shotgun and mow him down. But yeah. So it's a cool episode. There's, you know, five turkeys get killed, you know, in one episode. But yeah, this year is going to be pretty awesome, man. Every hunt that I'm doing this year, there's no tags per se.
Oh, wow.
Everything is over the counter, or nothing's a draw deal. It's a hunt that every single person can go do. I mean, I'm going to Arkansas and doing whitetails with my cousin back there. That's where I shot my first buck ever, was in Arkansas. So kind of full circle going back down there again. Yeah. But Kentucky, Iowa, we're going to do some coyote stuff with the guys at Fox Pro, my buddy John Collins. If I was a coyote and I knew John Collins was in my state, I'd go to my den and wouldn't come out until he left. he is just a savage when it comes to coyote killing, predator killing. I've got an over-the-counter velvet Arizona elk tag. I'll be doing that this year with Big Chino Outfitters. And
that's awesome.
That's actually the last week of June, which still I cannot wrap my head around that I'm going to be chasing elk at the end of June.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's a weird concept.
Yeah. And then I've got I put in again for my velvet mule deer tag for Colorado. If I don't draw this year, I do have access to a landowner tag. I just try not to take their landowner tags if I can, you know. I try to draw for real, but if not, we have a standing agreement that, you know, if I don't draw, then so I get to buy a landowner tag from them. But my buddy Brennan, he's a rad dude. He's another oddball that I met from social media. He started asking me questions about Hoyt bows, and we started chit-chatting about that stuff. And then it turned out he wasn't a weirdo, and we became friends. And
he's just
and
he's not like, as weird hey, as you initially thought, right?
Right,
he's still,
right, right.
Still probably a weirdo.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I got a family cattle ranch in Colorado. If you want to come out and chase mule deer, and yeah, I've been doing that the last couple of years and had success both times. So, going to try for a three-peat this year, and then
hell yeah,
God willing, there's a pretty decent elk herd that will make their way late season onto his cattle ranch. You know, they just get pushed off of the public and they end up on his piece. And so if that happens, you know, that's one of those deals where I'm like, I'm not buying the tag. You look out the window and you see the herd out there on the ranch, I will jump in the truck and I'll be there in 15 hours, you know?
yeah. Is that like a C tag, I'm assuming? Cause,
yeah, it's that. It's like that weird over-the-counter rifle late season tag.
Gotcha. Okay, that's pretty awesome, though.
Yep. So
yeah, I've got some we'll fun hunts. That. I'm actually going to Hawaii to hunt axis deer in like 4 weeks.
Oh,
so I'm pretty excited
yeah.
about that.
Are you going to be on Lanai, or where are you going to be?
Molokai. I've actually okay. yeah. It's the opportunity fell in my lap and I couldn't turn it down. It's something that I've always wanted to do. I told my wife, I'm like, hey, I turned 40 this year. This is my birthday present. Don't buy me anything. And she was like, okay, sounds good. So yeah, I'm heading out June 1st to I actually have four does and one buck. So I'm pretty fired up about it.
That's super rad. Yeah. Yeah, that's super cool. That's something I haven't done. It's on the bucket list for sure. Any axis actually, either in Texas or, I mean, Hawaii would be even cooler, but yeah, either place would be super rad.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Well, John, hey, I know we're actually over time from what I originally asked for you. I tell
all
this
good.
I'll listen to stories as long as you'll tell them. So if yeah. you want to tell any additional stories, great. If not, and you want to wrap it up, why don't we tell the people where they can find them? It's your choice, sir.
Yeah. Let's see. Pick an animal. We'll go one more story.
Okay, where to go antelope, because I know I'm going to draw an antelope tag this year.
Okay.
So if you have any antelope stories that, you know, just stand at the top of the list there,
yeah.
I'd love to hear it.
So the first year I went antelope hunting, I struck out.
Okay. I had archery, I'm assuming?
Archery, yeah. Archery, okay. Public land. I had opportunities, and I just choked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What state, if you don't mind me asking?
Montana. Southeast okay. Montana.
Gotcha.
So the next opportunity that I had to go out there, I had a little bit better game plan as what I wanted to do. I'd already been out there once. I mapped my route and kind of knew what area I wanted to focus on. And so we hit that area super hard. And so there's a private cattle ranch right next to a chunk of state land. And these goats were going back and forth. And I'm like, God, I got to catch them in transition when they come back and, you know, over to the public. So I'm parked my truck on this gravel road and I'm just glassing. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to really study the movement and see, let these goats do what they do naturally and maybe yeah. try to just kind of whitetail hunt them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, so this lady comes pulling up to me in this truck and she's your stereotypical Montana rancher with the rhinestone and silver jewelry and everything.
Okay.
And, she was like, what are you doing? You casing my shit? And I'm like, no, ma'am. I'm not casing your property. I swear. And she goes, you hunting? I'm like, well, trying to. And she goes, pronghorn? I said, yes, ma'am. And she goes, well, I got thousands of them on my ranch and they're eating all my alfalfa. So why don't you just come over here and kill one? I'm like, you're giving me permission to hunt your private land. She's like, fuck yeah. Like, let's
hell
go.
Yeah.
So I ended up killing it on public, but, it allowed me to get onto her private
yeah.
and start my stalk, you know, from there, which was a huge key piece that I needed, you know, to access this this piece of state that they were using.
Yeah.
So of course I shoot this pronghorn. I know it's a pretty good one, but man, I'm a whitetail hunter. I don't know shit about pronghorn. So I go back to her place because I find it's always very respectful. to stop at the owner's house, say, hey, this is what I took off your land. You know, do you want any meat? She's like, no, I'm not eating those stinky things, you know. And she goes, well, how many did you kill? And I was like, well, just the one that's in the bed of the truck, you know. And she goes, I told you to come and kill goats. And I said, ma'am, I only have one tag. And she goes, well, I don't care if you have one tag. They're eating my, you know, eating my alfalfa. So she's like, the next time you come here, you need to bring a passel of dudes and chicks and whoever you got with tags and kill as many of these things as y'all can. And it was a couple of years later before I was able to make it back out there. And she had fallen ill. And she was no longer residing at the ranch. Okay. So I lost access to that piece. But the crazy thing is I get home and a buddy of mine, Jeremy, he lives in West Virginia. And he's like, hey, did you score that goat? And I said, no, I didn't score it. And he's like, well, you ought to score it. I'm like, I'm in the middle of editing the episode and working on content deliverables, you know, for partners and stuff. So and I said, it's not a whitetail. So a couple of days goes by, he calls me, he says, hey, dude, you really need to score that pronghorn. I'm like, why? He's like, I've seen some people shoot pronghorn, and that one's pretty damn big. Like, it's got really, he's like, I think they're called cutters. He's like, it's got really big cutters in the tip of the curl, man. It curls all the way down and back with white tips. And he's like, I just really think you need to score it. And I said, dude, it's not very wide, so I don't think it's going to score very well. He's like, well, inside spread's not even a measurement, dumbass. He's like, just, I'll send you the information. So he sends me the Boone and Crockett scoring sheet. And pronghorn are actually relatively easy to score. You know, I mean, even if you've never scored one before, you're going to get it within a half inch, you know? And, so anyway, so I score it once, I score it twice, I score it three times, and I'm like an eighth of an inch difference, you know, each time I score it. So I called him back and I said, all right, I scored it. The lowest score that I got was like 80 7/8. And he's like, you are such a dick. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you have this horseshoe up your ass that the first time you go and hunt a new animal, he's like, you kill a giant. And I was like, well, is that a giant? He's like, you just killed a Boone and Crockett on public land with your bow, the first pronghorn you ever killed. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, whatever. I guess that's awesome. I was like, it's not a whitetail, you know? But I did the same thing with a bear. My first bear ended up being the fifth largest bear in Canada all time with a bow.
Oh, shit. Jesus.
And that was on public land. I got a weird knack for like first time hunting on public land, like killing something crazy or whatever. But for whatever reason, it's not a whitetail, and I'm still consider myself a whitetail hunter. And I'm like, man, I just suck at whitetails. So I don't know, but yeah. But if anybody wants to follow along with my crazy jackassery and whatnot, I try to be educational and I try to keep it fun. I try to be authentic as I possibly can. You know, sometimes, like I said, you got to pay the bills and you got to plug some partners and stuff, but, I'm pretty damn open book, man. I put on my pants the same as everybody. I acknowledge that I get a lot of opportunities. The only thing that I will pat myself on the back on is that I created this. I created those opportunities, you know, everything that happens after that is luck the same as anybody else, you know, but, I put myself in a position to win, and that's something that no one can take away from me. And, you know, and it was a lot of hard work. It was a lot of luck too, you know, being in the right place at the right time scenarios. And, you know, I'm not going to say that. Yeah. I mean, people are like, oh, you're just a badass. No, I got way luckier than I should have, you know? No. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, it's there. The opportunities are there, and, you know, sometimes bad luck just doesn't fall into other people's way. But when I see somebody do good shit, I'm the first one to cheer for them. You know, somebody else's success will never take away from my success is the way I always look at it. And, there's too much animosity and greed and envy, you know, out there than there needs to be. people meet me for the first time, and usually the first 60 seconds, they're like, man, he's kind of arrogant. He's kind of cocky. And then by the second minute, they're like, no, but I understand why. He's just a hard ass worker. And kind of the perception changes, really quickly. But anybody wants to follow along with my stuff, I appreciate it. Johnny Utah Hunt is what I go as my handle on Instagram, Facebook. It's Johnny Utah Hunt Official. The show is called Primal Divide. All new episodes go to the Waypoint channel, and then 30 days after that, then they go to YouTube. Per contract, Waypoint's got first access. My show does operate in what is called like semi-live. So, my turkey hunt episode comes out May 22nd. And that's the from this season. So, most TV shows, you're watching everything a year later. And I don't like that. I think it's stupid. Everybody's already seen it on social media. Why do I want to wait a year to see the hunt unfold? So, it puts a lot more work on my plate, but I think it keeps things better in the real time sense, of what really just happened. But the best way for me to do that is to put it in real time, and I think it flows pretty good. It keeps everything relevant as to what's happening. But and I greatly, greatly appreciate any support on social media. I am officially shadow banned and have been shadow banned for about 6 months.
Okay.
I used to reach 250 to 300,000 people, every couple weeks on Instagram alone. And now I'm maybe reaching 10,000 people every 2 weeks on social media.
Yeah, it's so weird how it does that. TikTok is the worst too. Everything I post on TikTok gets blocked. I don't know what it is. And they keep trying to ban my account, but social media is a necessary evil. I wish I could get rid of it, but it's kind of how we grow this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I say the same thing. I'm like, if it went away tomorrow, I'm cool with it. But because it's there, it's, essentially it's the office. So you got to show up, to keep doing work. So it is what it is. But I'd like to fight Zuckerberg. Everybody, I've been seeing all these posts about him getting into jiu-jitsu. So, I'd like to get on the mats with him and maybe make a deal. If I tap him, he has to lift the shadow ban or something.
Yeah. You got to get in line, man. I think Elon Musk gets the first go at him is my understanding.
I know there's another guy, Gordon Ryan. He's like the world's best grappler. He actually just made a post today and said something about, he wanted to roll with him. And if he didn't lift the shadow ban, he was going to break his leg.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool, John, man. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully we didn't have too many. I think the audio issues are on my side. Hopefully we could avoid those.
Okay.
Man, I really do appreciate it. I'm going to put links to all of your stuff in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
And again, thank you, man. Everybody get out there and follow John. Give him some love because obviously social media is stupid and help this guy make a living, feed his kids. That's all there is to it, man.
It's either GoFundMe or OnlyFans. You know what I mean?
Woo. You know what? I might subscribe to either one. So let's do it. all right, John. Thanks again, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Of course. All right. All right, guys. That's it. Another couple stories in the books. Again, I want to thank John for coming on the podcast. It was a pleasure chatting with him, learning a lot about kind of the inner quirks of the industry, and of course, hearing some hunting stories. So thank you, sir. I really do appreciate you and your time. Please, guys, make sure you go and check him out on social media, whatever your poison might be, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, whatever, YouTube. Give him a follow. Links to everything are in the show notes. And that's it, guys. If you have some stories to share, please feel free to reach out. I'd love to have you on the podcast. If you know someone else who does, have them reach out. I'm looking for more guests always. And beyond that, thank you guys for tuning in. Really do appreciate you. Now get out there and make some stories of your own. Bye.